Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 21st of Adar. We will get the chance to hear from Ravad Yosef today in Shut Yabia Omer, the third volume, the Yerbateyu section of that volume, Siman Chav Zion, responsible number 27. This is from, it's actually dated a different date, the 2nd of Adar Bet of 1957, but it's about something happened when he was sitting Shiva for his mother, who passed away on the 21st of Adar of 1957. So, Tavshin Yud Zayin, 1957, 21st of Adar, Ravad Yosef is sitting, his mother passed away. Later that week, he was sitting Shiva. And the man who he's writing to, who I think is was a Ram at Parat Yosef, was a teacher at Parat Yosef, but I'm not positive. But I think it was not well identified in the response, and that's my memory of it. And so he comes to pay a Shiva call. And he comes with the phrase that Ravad Yosef uses is Ahuzat Meireehu Rabbanim Ugdolim. A bunch of his, you know, he has like a posse, a group with him, of his friends and his supporters or whatever it is, and they all come together to pay a Shiva call to the relatively young Ravad Yosef. And when they came, Ravad Yosef stood up for them, especially for him, this man he was writing to, because he says in the Tshuva, Mishumasei Dechavot HaTorah, that it's a responsibility, it's an obligation to show respect for the Torah by standing up for Torah scholars, even though, he throws it in parentheses, even though I knew that I had no obligation to, because halachically an avel, a mourner, is not required to stand up for Torah scholars. So when I did it, there at the Shiva call, this sort of this tshuva struck me because it's like almost in line with those videos you can see online about mistakes that people make when they're paying a bikkur cholim call, when they're visiting the sick, or when they are paying a Shiva call. The people say, unfortunately, people will say some kinds of insensitive things. See, here too, one of the people who was in the group, one of the special scholars, but I'm not sure what that means. One of the guys says, an avel isn't allowed to stand up when they're sitting shiva. And I will say that many, many years ago, when I sat shiva with my father, Alav Shalom, I was given to understand that was the halacha, that an avel is not supposed to stand. So it turns out that Ravad Yosef is going to take a different position. So this man says to him at the shiva call, which is kind of interesting, he says to him at the shiva call, I don't think you're allowed to stand. I think you're supposed to stay seating. And the reason that's given is we're worried that that if the person stands, if the avel stands, that the person for whom he's standing or she's standing will say, sit. Right? They'll say, no, you don't have to stand for me, sit. And in saying sit, it sounds like not just sit now, right now, it means sit and be an avel. And we don't want people wishing other people they should sit and be avelim. So that's what happened. It happened at the Shiva call. I think it's kind of a mistake to try to, he was younger then, so he's only 37, so maybe they didn't realize, but I think it's a mistake to try to get Ravad Yosef on a lot of questions. So he says, so I thought to myself that I was going to, so I answered him at the Shiva call, I answered him that we shouldn't make up new gezerot, we don't make up new halachot, right? And I don't think there's a halacha that says the avel can't stand, the avel is allowed to stand and sit as he wants to. It's that the halacha he thinks is the avil is not required, the mourner is not required to stand. Well, ordinarily people are required to stand for Torah scholars. The avil, the mourner, is not required to stand. So that's what he said at the time. And then he was going to get into it more. And then he says, and then it came to my attention that that guy who said that to me wasn't telling me what he thought, but that he heard that from you, the man who he's writing the letter to. So I think, again, as I said, it's addressed to a Memhei Reish Ayin Zayin, which probably means Moreno Harav or Moreno Harav. And then I would suspect it's an Ovadia of some sort, but I don't know who the Zayin would be, and I'm not aware of it. So in any case, he's writing him and he says, so I heard that it's your opinion. So I thought maybe I'll express some of my thoughts to you about how it is and why it is that I see it differently than you apparently see it. So he says, Gorn Moed Katan on Chav Zayin Amid Bet says that Amar Vyochan and Hakol Chayavim La'amod Lifnei Nasi, that when the Nasi comes into the room, the Nasi is the head of the Sanhedrin, when he walks into a room, everybody has to stand, right? Even if he's not your Rebbe, even if he's not your Torah scholar, but you have to stand, Klutz Me'avel V'choleh. Other than an avel, a mourner, and a chole. Chole is considered to be, a chole means, that's what he's like, feeling a little bit unwell, somebody who's bedridden, and it's very difficult for them to get up. The Amar Rav Yochanan, Lakol Omrim Lahem Shivu, and then when it comes to everybody, you say to them, sit, other than an Avel and a Chole. Right, so that's the way the Gemara puts it together. Now we're going to have to understand how the Rishonim understood this Gemara. So, in the Tosos, they say, She'en tzarich la'amod v'im kein pshita she'yeshvu b'lo rashut. So Tosos says the reason why you don't tell them to sit down is because they know they can sit down. Because they know that they're only standing because they decided to stand. And therefore, when the Gemara says you don't tell them to sit, what it means is there's no need to tell them to sit, and you shouldn't bother to tell them to sit, because they'll know to sit on their own. If that's true, Shutzarach ain't Sarich Lomahem Lefshivu, it's that you don't have to tell them to sit, because they'll know. But there doesn't seem to be any other worry, if you would. Meaning, in the Tosus reading of that Gemara, when Rav Yochanan says, you don't tell an Avel or a Chola to sit, it doesn't mean you don't, because we have a problem with telling them to sit. It's you don't need to tell them to sit. Right? When you walk into a room, if you're a Torah scholar, you walk into a room, people stand up for you, you should tell them to sit, because it's not nice to leave them standing unnecessarily. So you say, please sit. Fine, well understood, right? That makes sense. And then Tosu says, good, and that you only have to do that, the Gemara means, Rav Yochanan means to tell us, for other people, but an Avel, then a Chola, who never had to stand to begin with, don't need you to tell them to sit, so there's no need to tell them to sit. But there's no problem in telling them to sit. There's no problem telling them to sit. So it seems like that there's no reason why they shouldn't stand, right? Because that's the way Tosus reads. If Tosus' reading is, you don't have to tell them to sit, it implies that there might be a circumstance in which they would stand. That's what Tosfos reads. So according to Tosfos, clear understanding that Rav Yosef is pointing out, according to Tosfos, is that there's no problem with an Avel standing up, and he or she can stand up as they want to, and they can sit down as they want to, and then there's no real problem in the person telling them to sit. It's not you shouldn't tell them to sit. There's no need to tell them to sit, because they'll sit whatever they want to. But that's the way Tosfos reads it. But the Rif and the Rush, they read it in a different way. They think that they understand that when you tell an Avel, word one to say to an Avel, no, please sit, that would sound like it means sit in your avelut. And if you said it to a person who's ill, it would sound like sit in your illness. And that's the way the Rambam writes it as well. That's the way the Rambam writes it. And that's the way the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch have it in Yeridaya. And according to that, then the kepeda is shelo lomar lahem shivu. That there is a kepeda that you don't want people telling them to sit. And then you can imagine saying, so it's better if an avil, if a mourner doesn't stand, because you're worried that maybe they'll tell them to sit. We're worried about the ramifications of what that means. It's not in the response, but it seems to me worthwhile. And if after I say this you think it's not worthwhile, you can email me about it. But it seems to me worthwhile to notice how careful we're being about language and the implications of language. Right? I don't think anybody thinks in this situation that if, let's say, somebody says to an Avel, sit, and let's say it sounds like sit in your Avelut, I don't think it means that we worry that that will mean that the Avel will then sit in their Avelut. I think we mean that it's not the nice way to speak to somebody. We want to try to avoid that. So it implies that according to these Rishonim, we're going to allow an Avel not to fulfill a mitzvah in the Torah, and we're going to see if he's going to come to that and talk about the mitzvah in the Torah, not to fulfill a mitzvah in the Torah to show honor for a Torah scholar, just to avoid the possibility that somebody will say to an Avel, sit, and it will imply sit and stay in this Avelus, because Avelus is good for you, Avelus is a good look for you. Right? We don't want to even imply that. So the lengths to which we go to avoid certain implications of language seems to be a topic we don't always pay attention to, and that it's worth giving more thought to what our language does and what it means and how it works and how we use it or don't use it properly and appropriately or improperly and inappropriately. In any case, coming back to the tshuva now. So there is a problem saying tshuva according to these Rishonim and seemingly according to the Shulchan Aruch mikol makom nireh she'ein shum chashash la'amod she'adayin tzvarat tosfot shayechet she'mikivan she'tzirik la'amod p'chit she'yeshu b'lo rishut. So he says, even though that's true, even though those Rishonim hold that the Gemara meant that you shouldn't tell them to sit because of the implication of it, it doesn't yet mean, says Rav Yosef, that means the Avel shouldn't stand. Meaning, the Gemara, remember, had Rav Yochanan had two statements. One was everybody should stand up for the Nasi, except for an Avel or a Chola. That could either be, is the Avel and the Chola are not allowed to, or they just don't need to. And the statement number two was, don't tell people to sit if they're mourners or ill. So that second statement, Tosus thought, was saying that it's unnecessary. And the Rif and the Rambam and the Rush and the Shulchan Aruch thought, no, that means you shouldn't say the word sit to them because of the implication of the word sit. Right? Now, The fact that we say you shouldn't say sit to them, does that also mean that they would read the first statement that everybody stands up for a nasi other than avela or chale, other than a mourner or an ill person? Would they read that to mean and a mourner or an ill person should not stand because of this worry or not? So Rav Yosef is saying, I don't see why. The fact that you're not required to stand and you're not supposed to say sit to them, I think the fact, what Tosfos said, still makes sense. It may not be the way that these we shouldn't read the Gemara, but it still makes sense that once somebody knows they're not required to stand, then they'll also know that they sit whenever they want to, and therefore you don't have to worry that people will tell them to sit. So you could say, wow, maybe he'll say it anyway. This was Rav Yosef. I'm not saying this. Rav Yosef says, and maybe even though it's possible that you would say that we're worried that the person who is being stood up for, the Torah scholar for whom one is standing, will feel bad about the tircha, about the trouble they're going to stand up, and will say, no, sit. So he says, we're talking about a Torah scholar we're talking about. We don't worry the Torah scholars won't know the halacha well. Now that's a very important, interesting point, right? I don't know how many Torah scholars know the source of every halacha that comes up, so that if you're, and people who we stand up for in their role as Torah scholars, who may not remember that the reason why we're worried about Avelim standing is the reaction of the person being stood for, that they'll say the word sit, and that will sound like sit and stay in your Avelud. I'm not so positive that everybody's such a bucket that they know such things, but that's what Rav Yosef says. He says it could be the Fidiz Rishonim who read it this way. They still would say that you could stand, and you'd say, oh, but we're worried that the guy will say it. You don't have to worry about Torah scholars that will say that. That's an interesting thought of Rav Yosef, meaning it shows an assumption, and I think in Rav Yosef's world, it might have been true, because my experience of the people who were his peers was that he was almost definitely the biggest bucky of all of them. He was the most knowledgeable of all of them. But that amassing great knowledge was a characteristic of this time. I think I also saw it in a Wikipedia article. I think about the Tzitz Eliezer, that the style of learning Yerushalayim was to amass great amounts of bikiyut, and they really had great amounts of bikiyut of knowledge. So if it's true that we don't have to worry about it, because Torah scholars will know this halacha, and then he adds, "Va'anan beditan lo gazrinan," we don't make decrees on our own. Meaning, unless you have it in the books that you're required not to stand because of this worry, he doesn't think you make up a new decree. So he's saying, I don't have any source of the decree. I don't think it's a decree. I think it's true that you're not supposed to tell a mourner that they can stay seated, but that beyond that, you don't have to go. And then he says, if you look at the Kesef Mishnah, the Kesef Mishnah thinks that the Rambam also thinks, because Mishnah understands the Rambam to mean that if they want to stand, they can. So that's clear, agreeing with what I said. Neshut Shvut Yaakov, right, which is a response from the 17th century, he had said, an avel me'olel ba'afar kano, the mourner sort of sitting in the dirt. We today sit on low chairs, and I think a lot of people think the halacha is you sit on low chairs. But the halacha really isn't you sit on low chairs. The halacha is you should sit on, the mourner sit on the floor as a sign of their avelud. And then when it gets to be that people didn't generally sit on the floors anymore, and therefore it was an uncomfortable position for people, so then low chairs became acceptable because of a completely different halacha called lavud, that if it's within three tefachim of the ground, which is about a foot, if the seat is within that, we think of it as being on the ground. But that's a whole different halacha. I've actually been to some shiva homes, one or two, not many, where the avelim make sure to sit on the floor and not just in the low chairs. But that's not the reason. That's another discussion. But Shvut Yaakov refers to an avel, to a mourner, as olel ba'afar karno. He's like in the dirt in his avilut, and a chole, and a sick person who's on his, you know, his sick bed. So he says that really the avel doesn't stand up for a different reason. Right? So far the reasons we gave were based on the idea of whether or not the person would say sit and not. So the Rishon Yaakov, he thought there was a different reason for this halacha. He thought that wasn't the reason for the halacha. The reason for the halacha was it's not a kima sheyesh ba kidur. So a kimash yesh b'hidur is, as Rav Yosef will tell us in a second, is a halachic concept from elsewhere about that when one stands for the person to be standing, where the act of standing will come off as an act of respect. So the other example we'll get to is, let's suppose somebody is in the mikvah, or in a part of the mikvah where people tend to be naked, and they're sitting down. Standing up when you're naked has no hidur to it. There's no honor to, you know, to showing yourself in that way. And therefore, that halacha is suspended in such a place. We don't have a kima, because you need a kima sheyesh b'hidur. The insight of the Shvut Yaakov, or the claim of the Shvut Yaakov, was that applies to our mourner as well. Since the mourner is sitting there on the ground in his sadness, for him to have to revive himself from his avilut to stand for this Torah scholar. That's not a kimashi ish bidur. There's no hidur there. You could have, I understand that you could have argued the other way. You could have said, no, all the more so. He rouses himself out of his sadness and his mourning, or she, for the sake of the Torah. The Shmuel Yaakov said, no, he thinks that what the halacha was saying was that's not. That to interrupt mourning, to interrupt the sadness of this person, and to force them out of there, or to even allow them out, but certainly to force them out of their avelus for this purpose, he thought there was no hidur. And he concludes there, Rabbi Yosef tells us, but if he wants to stand up, he can, right? Because even though it's a kimashi in bahidur, if he decides to stand up, then there is some honor that's given there. So, that's another reason that would say that Rabbi Yosef was right to choose to stand for Torah scholars who came to visit him during his avilut, during his time of mourning. Then he notes a pitchei tshuva on the Shulchan Aruch on Resh Mem Dalet, in paragraph 3 of the pitchei tshuva. He brings another source in Arba Turei Aven, which says that this whole idea that a mourner doesn't have to stand, that's only true about a zakein or a seva. If you stand up for somebody who's a Torah scholar, but a general Torah scholar, not your personal Torah scholar, we'll get to that the contrast in a second, or somebody who's very, very old, but there's a halacha that it's unclear exactly when, probably anybody over the age of 70 we should stand for, but certainly if you know somebody over the age of 80, right, the standard was seva. So we generally think that seva is over 70. So if over 70, you would stand up for them today. I'm not sure that qualifies as seva. Hold of discussion, but that Rez didn't get into. He's just quoting the Abra Turi Oven. Abra Turi Oven says the idea that a mourner doesn't have to stand is for those standings where it's for general Torah scholarship or for old age. But Rabbo Muvhak, but your father, your Rebbe, right? You're a Rebbe, your central Rebbe. That's a different element of standing for that in that situation. And also Aviv, one's father, Shehem Bichlal Mora, who are considered where there's an obligation not just of kavod of honor, but also of Mora, of certain amount of awe or fear, and standing can be part of that too. So there, the Abba Turi Oven thought that you had to stand. Not that you were allowed to stand, but you had to stand. There's a Wikipedia site on the author of the Abba Turi Oven. It's an amazing thing, Wikipedia. Rabbi Elazar Rokeach, who lived in the late 1600s, early 1700s, and was the chief rabbi of Amsterdam. So in his Abba Turi Oven, he makes that distinction between those different kinds of standing. That if you're standing just for somebody from your honor, to whom we owe honor, that is not done during Avilut, that is not required during Avilut, but for a situation of Mora, then one would be required to stand for them. Now, I want to point out that at this point we're talking about the Avel is in mourning, but the father is not, right? Meaning, let's say when Rabbi Yosef is in mourning for his mother, so if his father was still alive at the time, then he too would have been an Avel, and we'll get to that at the end of the Tshuva. But right now we're talking about, let's say, sadly, the Avel is mourning his wife, or she's mourning her husband, or a child, Rachmana Litzlan, because it was a sibling. It could be a half-sibling through the mother, not through the father, so the Avel is mourning and not the father. But in any case, so right now we're talking about where the father is not in mourning, and the Avel is the mourner is in mourning. So too, says the Abba Turi Oven, in the bathhouse, that would also be the halakha, he thought. That even though, in general, we don't stand in the bathhouse because there's no hidur to it, but if there's an element of mora, so this Abba Turi Oven held that it was. According to that, says Rav Yosef, in our situation where we say that hakol chayavin la'amor b'fnei nasi, that you have to stand for a nasi, other than ovel or chole, so then Rav Yosef says he thinks that's somewhat of a contradiction to the Abba Turi Oven, because a Nasi, the head of the Sanhedrin, we generally treat, and the reason why we give him such honor is that he's sort of like the Rabbo Mufak of the entire Jewish people. So it's like this person's Rav Mufak, and that's why he has to stand Kimlo Einav, in general, not as a mourner. In general, we stand, there's different amounts we stand. Let's say, you know, if an elderly person passes by, we have to fulfill the Torah mitzvah, the biblical mitzvah of standing for an elderly person. So we stand as they pass by, and once they get out of our Dalet Amo, once they get out of our, we might just stand a little bit, right? You stand a little bit and then sit back down. You might have to stand until they're out of your Dalet Amo, out of your halachic space, right? But when it comes to a Rebbe Mufak, your Rebbe, then you have to stand Kimlo Einav, means that for as long as you can see him. And that halacha applies to a Nasi as well. And it says, Rav Yosef, in a Talmid Chacham Muflag, if you have a very well-known Torah scholar whose Torah scholarship is extraordinary, above the level of the ordinary Torah scholar, so that would also be like a Rebbe Mufak. So in terms of that the application, the principle of it, Hashem Elokecha Tira, that we should fear Hashem, and that et in the verse is often used to add ideas. Here it's used to add the idea of the Rabot Tamidei Chachamim. This is, that's part of a famous Gemara. The Rabbi Yosef doesn't mention it, but I'll just give you a slight background. There's a Gemara that talks about, I think Rabbi Akiva would always darshan every et in the Torah when he got to, or somebody else, maybe Nachum Ishkamzu would, and then when he got to et Hashem Elokecha Tira, he said, you can't add anything to fearing Hashem. There's nobody who's an adjunct to fearing Hashem. There's nobody to add in that situation. They said, well, it's going to happen to all the etim you darshan. He said, I'll give them all up, and I'll get reward for that. But then I think Rabbi Akiva was the one who came along and said, no, it's L'Rabot Tamidei Chachamim. I got almost all of it right, and I always forget that when I'm telling these stories and I'm giving a shiur and they come to my mind, I want to make clear that the part of the reason that I like saying what pops into mind as I give a shiur is that many years ago in the introduction to Rabbi Pesach Krohn's, I think, first book about the Maggid of Jerusalem, and he called it the Maggid Speaks by Rav Shalom Shwadron, he said that Rav Shalom Shwadron had this custom that when he was speaking, if a thought came into his head, he would say it because he assumed it came from heaven, that he was supposed to say it right then. And I don't fully trust myself to that extent. I don't trust that I have that kind of divine providence to that extent. But I like the idea that when things come up, to put them in, because I think it follows that little bit of that tradition. But here, I always forget that I can check myself. So it happens to be, it's more in a couple of places. One of them being Chav Bet Amid Bet in Pesachim. And the original person was either Shimon HaAmsoni, or some people say Nechemya HaAmsoni, who would always say that an et meant to add something. That's what the word et, part of what the word et does in the Torah. And then he went to Hashem Elokecha Tira. He said, I can't add anything. His students said, what's going to happen to all the etim? He said, I'll get reward for taking it back once I saw that it was wrong, the same way I did for darshan. And then Rabbi Akiva came along and said, no, et Hashem Elokecha Tira, it means to include Tamidei Chachamim. So coming back now to Rabbi Yosef's Tshuva, that was just a throw-in that he put in there without telling us the whole background. So he says, if that's true, right, if the Shvut Yaakov was right that a father and a Rebbe Muvhak are different because there's a Mora aspect, says Rabbi Yosef, I don't understand, because the Gemara says that you don't stand for a Nasi, but a Nasi has many of the aspects of the father and the Rebbe in terms of the definition of how long we stand for them is the same. It's kimlo enav, it's as long as we can see them. And the Nasi would certainly seem to fall under the rubric of Rabbi Akiva's darshaning et Hashem Elokecha Tira to include great Torah scholars. And if so, then why would it be that an Avil doesn't have to stand up for him according to the Shvut Yaakov? So the Rabbi Yosef sees that as an issue for the Shvut Yaakov. In addition to which, he says, it could be that the whole reason the Shvut Yaakov doesn't quite work, because you could say that it's only in a bathhouse or a bathroom, right? A Beit HaKisei, Beit HaMirchatz. That's where Kima has no Hidur, that standing up is not considered a Hidur, because of the place, not the function of people being naked or not, it's because of the place they're in. We'll see in Arach HaShulchan a second that says that maybe that's not true, but if you say it's the place, then with an Avel, a mourner, or an ill person, that reasoning shouldn't apply. Not only that, says Rabbi Yosef, it's also not a Hidur. If you say it's not a Hidur because of the place, that's one thing. But also he says, presumably people are not dressed, and that's not a Hidur. But I had introduced that idea beforehand, so I apologize. It doesn't go up until now. The first idea was just that because of the place you're in, you don't do it. And now Rabbi Yosef says, well, not only the place, right, which is a problem, because it's not a place of Hidur, it's not a place of people honoring each other, a place where people go to take care of their bodily needs, whether washing or relieving themselves. So that's not a place of Hidur. Now he says also, but a lot of people aren't wearing clothing, and that's no Hidur. And not only that, he says, I can show that that's an idea, that's an issue, because if you look in the Aruch HaShulchan in Reish Mem Dalet and Vav, he points out, this is the Gemara he talks about, there were sort of like three rooms in a bathhouse. There was the outer room where everybody was dressed, and that was just like a reception area. There was a middle room where people were changing. So in the middle room, people were changing. Some people were dressed, some people were undressed. And then in the inside room, everybody was undressed because they were in the bathhouse and they were doing whatever they were doing. Meaning they were, you know, sulking in the sauna or they were getting ready or whatever it was. So that was certainly not a place to be. But the Aruch HaShulchan says in that middle room, all those people who are dressed should stand for a Torah scholar who enters. So that supports Rabbi Yosef's idea that it's a function of A, the place, and B, the fact of not being in it wearing any clothing, but have but an avel, right? So why is it not a kimo sheish behidur? So the Aruch HaShulchan, I think the Shvut Yaakov is trying to say that the fact that the avel is in such a sad state, and halachically sad state, not just like he's coming with his own problems, he's in a halachically sad state, that fact itself means that the kima has no hidur, that the standing is not considered hidur. So Rav Yosef is not sure about that. Not only that, Rabbi Yosef, he says he thinks the whole idea of olel ba'afar karno, that the ovel is sitting in the ground, rolling in the dirt in his sadness, he thinks that's only on the first day of Shiva. Why would he distinguish the first day of Shiva from other days of Shiva? Now, I haven't translated that phrase olel ba'afar karno until now. I keep forgetting that I have at my fingertips the way to look all this stuff up, so you don't have to rely on my minimal knowledge. It's a Rashi. The first source that I found that quotes it, then everybody quotes it from there, is a Rashi on Ketubot. The Gemara is talking about the question of whether somebody who is a Tarut, who has something else on his mind, is Pater for Mitzvot, and then points out that the only reason that an Avel doesn't wear tefillin the first day of Shiva is because there's a pasuk about it. Hashem says, "Yechezkel be'erecha chavush shalecha." You should wear tefillin even though you're in mourning. And Rashi says that ordinarily an avil is me'olel ba'afar kvano, which I still think I couldn't. I tried to look up online quickly, but I didn't find an exact translation. But I think it means rolling in the dirt of his sadness, of his avelus, of his time of trouble. But says Rav Yosef now, but that's only true on the first day. Right? Because if an avel is molel b'kafar karno, building off this Rashi that he clearly knew that we were referring to, then it should be all the days of Shiva, but it's not. It's only that first day. So apparently you're only molel b'kafar karno that first day. And that would mean then that if that's the reason for why an avel does not need to stand for most people that he ordinarily would stand for, or she would stand for, that should only be on the first day. But that's not the way we have it. Then he says, that, you know, I might have thought of another possible reason to pater, to exempt an avel for standing up. You could say an avel in some places is compared to a king. The Gemara in Ketubot in Samach Tanur Bet says, how do you know that when you have a meal in a house of avelut that the mourner sits at the head? And then quotes a pasuk from Eov in Kafter Kafhei where it says, Evchar darkam v'eshev barosh v'eshkon hamelech pigdud kasher avelim yinachem. So that the verse puts the idea of kings of meals and kings of sitting at the head and kings and mourners together. And the Rambam in the Laws of Kings says that the king doesn't stand up, even for a Navi, even for a Kohen Gadol, other than when he's is specifically asking for information from the Urim V'Tumim, and then he has to stand as part of the procedure of the Urim V'Tumim. So maybe you could say that an Avel is like a king, and since an Avel is like a king, he doesn't stand. But that's to suggest he doesn't go anywhere with it. The Aruch HaShulchan, he points out, says the custom is the avel, the mourner or an ill person will not stand for somebody when they come in. And when they say in the Gemara, you don't say shave to people, to mourners and to people who are ill. So that means if they stood, and then the Aruch HaShulchan throws in the words, Av she'en lahem lasot kitz. The Aruch HaShulchan says that it's better if they don't. But the reason that it's better if they don't is that you're worried that the people will say the wrong thing to them. And then the Ma'arif Falaji also has an idea that they're not required to stand. And the reason they're not required to stand is you're worried that people will tell them to sit. So that sounds like also that they should stand. So, but some Torah Rav Yosef felt like if it's for a real Torah scholar who will know not to say sit, then it was permissible for him to stand. He had the right to choose, and that's what he chose to do. There's one last issue. So far he's clarified his understanding of the various sources which tell us that for all that an Avel is maybe allowed to stand, it's perhaps preferable that he not stand for, or she not stand for the worry of misleading people into thinking, not thinking, into saying sit, and that's a problem because we don't like the connotations according to some Rishonim, according to many Rishonim, including the Rif, Rambam, Rosh, and then the Shulchan Aruch following them. We're worried about the connotation of sit and stay in your Avelut, and therefore we prefer that they not sit, stand, they not stand, so they not get told to sit. Okay? But once it turns out that Rav Yosef thinks that he's allowed to do it, then what happens? He says, no, but there's a Yerushalmi that people know in Brachot. I don't mean by people, I don't mean you and me, I mean people, like Rav Yosef knows, that kol ha'patur min ha'davar ve'osehu nikra hedyot. That if you're not obligated to do something and then you do it, you're called a hedyot. You're called an unlearned person, a person who doesn't realize and understand the way the world works, the way things should be done. Right? So Rav Yosef says, so therefore you could say, well, if you're not required to stand and you chose to stand, you're a hedyot because you're taking on things that you're not supposed to be taking on. So that's obviously, I think it's obviously already, that can't really be what the Gemara means, because we see all sorts of people who take on all sorts of things that they're not required to take on, and we don't think that that's a problem. So Rav Yosef was going to explain it to us, and I'm going to have to do it very quickly because I'm running out of time. So first, the Meiri says that whole idea is only where things where you're potter, you're not obligated. And by doing it, no positive value will come. The Meiri's language is, you won't get from it either seichel or musar, intellect, insight, or musar, or learning, or silsul, or some kind of a higher station in life, or some kind of improvement, or it'll teach somebody greater humility. And none of those things will happen. That's when you're a hedyot, right? There's no value to doing it. That's what the Gemara means. You're not obligated, and there's no value, so then. But in our situation, says Rav Yosef, there's Kavanah Torah. By standing, I'm reminding myself and maybe others of the importance of Kavanah Torah, so therefore that Yerushalmi, according to your Meiri's reading the Yerushalmi, that wouldn't qualify. In addition, he says, this is a matter of not only Kavanah Torah, but of Inan L'Chavero. I'm showing proper respect for a friend, for a colleague, for a rabbi, maybe even a greater rabbi than me, and that's of Inan L'Chavero. It's an interpersonal halacha, and the Chidat already said that the whole idea of that Yerushalmi was only in mitzvah between Hashem and people, and I think the reason would be, if Hashem told you you don't have to do it, then to insist on doing it, that's a little bit arrogant, and it's a little bit lacking in understanding. Hashem will tell you what Hashem wants. If Hashem says, I don't need this, then what are you doing? So he does that, so that's where it applies. But between people, right, if the halacha is that I don't have to treat my friend in X good way, that we all agree is a good way, and I decide to do so, who's going to stop me? Whoever would think that Yerushalmi would say, that person's a head yoke. That doesn't make any sense. Right? And it's clearly untrue. So that's what the Chidah says. So that Yerushalmi clearly doesn't apply to that. So here we have it as well. So the Chidah says it applies to Kriya Shema, Tefillah, and Sukkah, and things like that. And that's where they meant it. But mitzvah between people, certainly, if you do more than you're required to do, that's lifnim mishurat din. We usually like lifnim mishurat din. We usually say that that's very, very nice to do above and beyond what's required of you. Then another idea that Rabbi Yosef gets from the Shut Olat Shmuel, which I think is by Rabbi Shmuel Florentine, according to the Hebrew Wikipedia page that I found. I think so. He was born in the mid-1700s, and then he was a Rav in Salonika, for the Jews of Salonika, which is a Greek port city. I always forget. I always am thinking that it's in Greece, but it might be in Turkey, but it's in Greece. So the Olat Shmuel, coming back to our Tshuva Rav Yosef, the Olat Shmuel says that whole Gemara in the Yerushalmi is only in the case of a Chumrah that will lead to a Kula, that a stringency that would lead to some kind of a kula. Now, when I see that, I'm reminded of that when I was in Smicha, which is a long time ago, Rabbi Mordechai Willig gave a couple of shirim to the Smicha guys, to all the Smicha guys that I attended. And I remember him saying very clearly that in his mind, every chumrah leads to a kula. That every chumrah, every stringency in some area of halacha will lead us to be less careful about another area. We're always trampling on some area of halacha. And therefore you have to balance it. He doesn't say, therefore you never be ma'akim. You're just saying you have to always be aware that the chumros always come with consequences, right? Would come with a ramification. That's consequences is a bad word. With ramifications. Then you have to weigh it. So this Olat Shmuel seems to think that that's not always quite as true. He says, so the example would be that in the case of Sukkah, the Gemara there is very clear that if, let's say, it's raining and you're not required to sit in a Sukkah, you say, no, I'm going to force myself to sit in a Sukkah even though it's raining. So that's a head yod. Now, one reason that's a head yod is because that's a bit adam lamakom mitzvah. It's a mitzvah between us and Hashem, and we just said that the Chidah says if Hashem knows how to tell us what to do and what not to do. Another issue is that sitting in the Sukkah, like the Meiri said, won't necessarily teach you anything if it's busy raining. So the Olat Shmuel said that if you're machmir, not only that, you won't enjoy Yom Tov as much, and you won't have the simchas Yom Tov, the happiness of Yom Tov you're supposed to have. So that seems to imply that if that's not an issue, there's no kula that's coming out of it. So here you could argue, let's say to show that Rabbi Willig is right, you could argue, well, he's being makil on his avelus. He's showing himself to be less wrapped in his avelus than he could be, but I think the Rabbi Yosef doesn't see it that way. The whole question of these balance, but that's what he's saying. Here, this chumrah is not leading to anything problematic, and therefore I think I should have been allowed, I am allowed to do it. And then finally he says, that whenever you have a machlokas saposki, the Prima Gunim said, whenever you have a machlokas saposki, whatever you have, when we say that you're putter for something, you're not liable to do something, you're not obligated to do something, that's only because we're following, let's say, a majority of poskim, but the Prima Gunim, it said, but if once there's a machlok and a poskim, you're not a head yod if you decide to follow the more stringent position. And here he had a shut yad aliyah that says, yes, he thinks you're required to stand in these situations for these tamid chachamim. And he thought that was the opinion of the tour, even though we paskin likula. But if you want to follow this shut yad aliyah and stand, he thinks you're allowed to. All these reasons. Rabbi Yosef thinks he was okay to stand for the Torah scholars who came in, and this is the letter that came out of it, and this is our benefit from his shiva, that we got to learn all these issues. We got to learn about the Avelos issue of standing up, that it seems to be not a problem in the standing up. It's more a problem with the people who react, although there was the Shvat Yaakov, well, there's a problem in the Hidur, that there was a standing with that Hidur. Rabbi Yosef actually felt that that was untrue, and then there was also the question of, what does it mean to be machmir? When are we allowed to be machmir? And when is it inappropriate to be machmir? We saw some insights into that about the distinction between being whether we'll learn something from the chumrah, whether the chumrah comes with a downside that's a problem, or perhaps whether the chumrah is in a question of ben adam lakom or ben adam chavero. Those are some of the options that we saw. And that is a response of the day for the